and welcome to The Sector, the radio show podcast discussing the role of nonprofits, social justice, activism, and progressive politics. With me, your host, Ethan Clow, and as always, we are broadcasting right here on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver. That's on your radio dial, as well as streaming live at CITR.ca, and of course, via podcast, whenever, wherever, as technology permits. Well, it is Friday. It is the day before Halloween, as we are broadcasting live here on CITR, 8 a.m. in the morning. I hope you're having a fantastic Friday morning. The weekend is here. Halloween will be here. And then, well, we'll be back at it next week. So enjoy the time off as you can. If you're listening via podcast, well, welcome to the show whenever, wherever. I hope you're having a fantastic day or week or whatever the circumstances are for you right now. Well, we have a fantastic show today. As always, here on The Sector, we like to talk about the nonprofit world, social justice, activism, charities, progressive politics, how all of those different things converge on Canadian society and, you know, the world around us. We talk about policies and strategy for nonprofits and charities, rules and regulations, how politics impacts how a charity and a nonprofit operates, as well as, in the broader scope, how does it interact with Canadian society. So we'll dive into things like fundraising discussion, donor stewardship, blah, blah, blah. But we also like to talk about social justice, and we like to kind of dive into some really interesting issues around gender, politics, poverty, society, what is going on in our culture right now, that kind of thing. And by blending these topics together, we get a kind of a big tent philosophy here on The Sector. And it's always great because I do really appreciate when people send me your comments and your thoughts about the show. And I really appreciate the fact people seem to be really enjoying that we kind of blend a lot of different topics together here on The Sector. There's maybe not everybody is going to see eye to eye on these different things, but whatever direction you're coming from, whether it's strictly sort of a nonprofit point of view and you want to get strategy, or if you're talking coming from an activist community, it's definitely awesome that people are getting exposed to some new ideas and also, you know, kind of challenging some pre-existing conceptions. And that's a great great thing here for the show. So I'm very pleased to get that feedback. Now, as I was saying, great show today. Obviously, the big news here in Canada, we have a new prime minister. Let's just let that sink in for a moment. No more Stephen Harper. The air just seems fresher. Birds sound birdier. Food and drink tastes so much sweeter. Well, enough of that. We may have won in that respect, but have we really? We've swapped the Conservatives for the Liberals. We've swapped Stephen Harper for Justin Trudeau. Now, have we come out ahead? I mean, in a lot of ways, following up one of the worst prime ministers in Canadian history will not be hard. Let's be honest about that. But Justin Trudeau has made a lot of promises, and he has clearly indicated that despite his claim to be a Liberal, and you know, we're talking about the Liberal Party of Canada, he hasn't exactly walked the walk when it comes to progressive politics here in Canada's past few years. So there's certainly a lot of skepticism, I think very healthy skepticism, about what Trudeau will do for this country. So on today's show, one of the things that I want to discuss in depth is the promises of Justin Trudeau. We're going to go through and go look at some of the campaign promises, the campaign pledges that were made by the Liberal Party and ultimately Justin Trudeau. And we'll take a look at them and see, you know, will he follow through on any of these things? Obviously, you know, it's very early, but we can sort of get an idea of where things are going. And I think, you know, we'll have to watch these predictions. We'll see the predictions, actually. I guess we'll watch these promises and see, do they come to fruition? Can we predict what Justin Trudeau will do in office? So all that coming up next here on The Sector. Today is Friday, and Friday the 30th, that means tomorrow, Saturday, is the 31st, which is Halloween. I thought it'd be kind of fun to do something in the vein of Halloween. So, I thought, okay, what can we do? We could play a bit of Halloween music. We could play the Monster Mash, but I've done that before, and it's not terribly original anymore. You know, people kind of do that already. So I thought, what's something a bit more unique? And I was looking online and trying to find something interesting that we could play maybe or talk about. And I came across something that I haven't heard before, a recording of Edgar Allan Poe's The Raven as read by Mr. Christopher Lee. Now, you may know Christopher Lee recently passed away earlier this year, a very accomplished actor, one of the best. Christopher Lee is famous for being in movies like Lord of the Rings, where he played Saruman, as well as in Star Wars, Dracula, many, many, many films. He did a lot of movies with Tim Burton. So he was kind of an icon of sort of gothic style movies. He played these larger than life characters. And I thought it'd be kind of cool to listen to Christopher Lee's rendition of The Raven. Now, I'm sure that many of you have already heard The Raven before. It's a very famous poem. You probably studied it in high school. But it's also a really fantastic poem. One of the best examples, I think, of classic American literature. So we'll take a listen to that later up on the show. Probably end with that as a cool way to bring about the Halloween season. So again, so much to get to on today's show. It's going to be lots of fun. We'll take a quick break here, and then we'll come back and get on with things. So if you're listening live, now's a good time. Go grab a coffee, maybe. And if you're listening via podcast, well, I guess pause it and go get a coffee, because that's the miracle of technology. We will be right back after this.
Let's listen in as one poor soul tries to find something good to enjoy on the radio. Let's see here,
Everybody dance, dance. What, you don't like to dance? Everybody dance.
Ugh. Everybody. God, this is awful.
Well, I climbed up the mountain, climbed back down again for you. I climbed up the mountain again for you, and then I climbed back down, climbed
up. Isn't there anything?
Listening to the radio these days can be distressing. Fortunately, here at CITR, our programmers choose the music that they play, so our charts reflect what people actually listen to. To find out what's really topping the charts, pick up a copy of Beatroot or Discorder magazine, or check us out online at citr.ca. Unless, of course, you'd rather keep listening to the chart-topping single, Everybody Dance.
What, you don't like to dance? Everybody dance. Everybody dance. Everybody dance, dance. What, you don't like to dance? Everybody.
Well, how best to explain it? You've seen me in X-Men.
Yeah.
The character I am, Professor Charles Xavier. Mm. If you remember, he can control things with the power of his mind.
Yeah.
Make people do things and see things. So I thought, what if you can do that for real? I mean, not in a comic book world, but in the real world.
All right.
So in my film, I play a man who controls the world with his mind.
Right. That's interesting.
Yeah, for instance, I'm walking along. And I see this beautiful girl, and I think I'd like to see her naked, and so all her clothes fall off.
All her clothes fall off?
Mm, yes, and she's scrabbling around to get them back on again, but even before she can get her knickers on, I've seen everything. You know, I've seen it all.
You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver. We've already seen everything.
Okay. It's a comedy, is it?
No.
And we are back here on The Sector, with me, Ethan Clow, on CITR, of course. Well, the election. So it was exhausting. There was a long campaign, a difficult day of voting, lots of concerns and issues and voter suppression all across the board. It was nerve-wracking. But then the map went red. You know, personally for me, I wasn't terribly happy. I was obviously very pleased that it was the end of the Harper era. I think that, you know, Canada had really suffered under conservative leadership in terms of not just progressive politics. I mean, you look at the situation that charities were facing from the Harper conservatives, looking at the way that criticism of the Canadian government, criticism of sort of traditional values in Canada, was being labeled as terrorism and radicalism and whatnot. Hopefully that kind of damaging rhetoric will change, but, you know, it's hard to say at this point. Obviously, I think no one would be surprised to know that personally I was hoping for an NDP victory. Of course, retrospect, that seemed unlikely. The NDP suffered badly in our most recent election, losing many of their seats. They managed to hang on to a few key areas, some NDP strongholds, obviously, but it does cast a very unfortunate shadow on Canada's really only truly left-wing party. Where will they go from here? How will the party recover, if at all? Will they be able to carry the momentum from, say, winning Alberta to other provincial elections? So that remains to be seen. Ultimately, I think the big question will be, you know, what happens from a leadership point of view with the NDP? Does Tom Mulclair stick around? One thing we know for certain is that Stephen Harper will not be sticking around. He's resigning. And I don't believe he has yet, officially, but news is out there that he will resign sometime next week. And I think we can all say here to Stephen Harper, get out. Just go away. But seriously, just go away. But the question remains now, you know, what's to be done with the Liberals? Will we see a return to kind of the progressive nature of Canadian politics that we had, 10 years ago? We just don't know. Of course, the good thing is that regardless of the political situation here in Canada, there's one thing you can always rely on, and that is the nice, crisp taste of some bacon. Or can you? Well, it turns out that actually bacon gives you cancer, and if you eat it, you will die. No, not really, but that's just the news. Yes, recently, the World Health Organization, the WHO, the organization, not the band, put out a study regarding the carcinogenic components of red meat, bacon, ground beef, and processed meats, suggesting that, in fact, that these meats, these bacons, are actually more cancer-causing than previously thought. This news spread like wildfire across all news medias, and we got all kinds of really extraordinarily exaggerated reporting throughout the area. And of course, countermeasures from the meat industry saying that this is propaganda or not all that important. Well, really, what's the true cut of meat here for this particular story? Now, I don't usually dive into complex scientific issues on the sector, but I thought it'd be fun to just kind of quickly give a bit of perspective on this, because again, bacon is really good, and I'd hate for people to deprive themselves out of fear of getting cancer. So let's give a bit of background here. The World Health Organization put out a classification saying that processed meats are now a group 1 carcinogen, which is the same category of cancer-causing things as tobacco. Now, let's just stop right now. Everybody just stop what you're doing. Stop. Put your coffee down. Turn the volume up on your headphones or whatever. Let's just take a second. Now, just wait. Very clearly now, bacon is not as bad as smoking. Okay? Got that? Bacon is not as bad as smoking cigarettes. Just stop thinking that, and just bacon, not as bad as smoking cigarettes, okay? Putting that out there, they may be in the same category, but they are not on the same playing field whatsoever. Okay, let's just nip that in the bud right now. Right now. Okay, moving on. Now, you may be confused because, you know, bacon and cigarettes are now classified as level 1 carcinogens. And that, you know, you would think that that should mean something. And it does, in a sense. It's just the World Health Organization doesn't exactly explain the reasoning behind how they rank potential carcinogens. Just because something is in level 1 means that there is scientific evidence that the food or drink or whatever it is can cause cancer. But what that does not actually mean is how much that substance actually increases your risk for getting cancer. That's a very slight distinction, but it's incredibly important. To put this in perspective, smoking a cigarette increases your relative risk of lung cancer by about 2,500%. 2,500%. That's big. Eating two slices of bacon a day increases your risk of colorectal cancer by about 18%. Now, given the frequency of colon cancer and whatnot, that means that your risk of getting it increases over your life from about 5% to 6%. And that's assuming you eat that much bacon, two slices a day. I don't think many people eat that much bacon a day. I mean, maybe in America, but let's keep this local. By the way, you can find more information on this from some pretty reliable sources, including blogs like Science Based Medicine. I've been reading an article on Wired, which kind of goes into depth on this, as well as I've seen a few other ones that have been floating around. Before you read any kind of scientific paper, make sure that the person writing it has some kind of background that you can think is reliable in terms of understanding. Do they even know what these terms scientifically mean? Don't take my word for it. Do your own research. But avoid places that are just kind of reporting on the story. Look for someone who actually has qualifications and expertise to really give a solid understanding of what this means. Now, again, to kind of give a bit more of a context, when people report things like processed meats rank alongside smoking as cancer causes, attributed to World Health Organization, as The Guardian did, that's just misrepresenting the facts. Because again, the way that they have ranked these things is into five groups. There's group one, which is carcinogenic, group 2A, probably carcinogenic, group 2B, possibly carcinogenic, group 3, non-classifiable, and group 4, probably not carcinogenic. So yes, group 1 now includes processed meats and cigarettes, but also asbestos, alcohol, and sunlight. Of course, right? Because sunlight is, we know, carcinogenic. If you get enough of it, it's going to give you cancer. That doesn't mean that we advise people to walk around wearing umbrellas in broad daylight. It just means that we know for a fact that this thing can cause cancer. The important word, can. Will it cause cancer remains to be determined by your exposure. So when it comes time to decide what you're gonna have for breakfast or dinner or whatever, will cutting down on your processed meats, your bacon, your ham, salami, whatever, potentially improve your long-term health? Yeah, absolutely. Switching to an all-vegan diet would have a huge impact. But that doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to prevent yourself from getting cancer. And number two, because you don't do that, because you do eat a few slices of bacon every now and then, doesn't mean that you're suddenly going to get cancer for sure. It's just, we now know that under the right circumstances, these things can cause cancer. So again, it all comes back to having a firm understanding of what you're reading and not exactly trusting mainstream news to give you a in-depth and carefully vetted scientific opinion when it comes to an explosive headline like this. Ultimately, I think it's pretty safe to say that enjoying a bit of bacon will be fine. Doing so in moderation, of course, just like you should do with everything in life. Moderate your coffee intake, moderate your peanut butter intake, unless you have nut allergies, in which don't have any, because that's just common sense, of course. But anyway, we're going to take a quick break here on The Sector. We'll return after this, diving into some more interesting progressive politics related issues. Stay tuned. There's more coming up next.
Whoever said money can't buy you friends obviously wasn't a member at CITR. When you become a member, you get the Friends of CITR card with incredible discounts in the downtown area at
The Baker and the Chef, Bang On T-shirts, Beat Street Records, Dunleavy Snack Bar, The Fall Tattooing, Fortune Sound Club, Hits Boutique, Pacific Cinematheque, Perch, The Portside Pub, Save On Meats, and Vinyl Records.
To find out more, visit us in room 233 of the sub on the UBC campus or go online to citr.ca.
I swear to God, I'm not wearing just my underwear right now. This is Beth. Hi, this is Beth Ditto from The Gossip, and you're listening to CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver. No, yeah, this is the best thing in the world. You guys are going to be blown away.
Have you seen the little piggies crawling in the dirt? And for all the little piggies, life is getting worse. Always having dirt to play.
And we are back here on The Sector with me, Ethan Clow, broadcasting on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver on that radio dial. Well, just finishing up our conversation on bacon and how good it is and how importantly you should know you're probably not going to get cancer by having some bacon. So just putting that out there. Well, moving on with today's show, a bit of good news, actually, to come out of Canada Post. And that's not always, you know, the thing that you expect from Canada Post these days. But apparently, on Monday afternoon, Canada Post announced that it was putting on hold its plans to transition away from door-to-door delivery. Now, you may remember months ago, Canada Post announced that they were going to phase out door-to-door delivery of the mail. Instead, they were going to set up these sort of mail kiosks, I guess, or kind of mail delivery hubs where you'd be able to go and collect your mail from. So, you know, you can kind of imagine maybe like every block or every, you know, every like two every block, you'd have these little kind of mail shelving units established. And it'd be kind of like how an apartment building has, you know, its mail blocks in the lobby. But that would be like it for everybody. So you would go there, you pick up your mail, your bills, your junk mail, whatever, any packages, that kind of thing, and you would take it home. Now, some people thought, well, good, that'll save money. And others thought, well, wait a second, what about people who have a disability and need mail delivery? What about people who live in remote parts of the country? Or what about people who have just difficult ways of getting around? In response, there was a bit of kind of hand-waving and some, well, wringing of hands, actually, over, well, we're not going to discontinue all door-to-door mail, just some door-to-door mail, and seniors will still be looked after, and we'll have a system in place, and it'll be all really good. But these questions were never really satisfactorily answered. It always just kind of seemed like Canada Post was, well, yeah, it'll work out, we think. Yeah, I don't know. So this is actually really good news. The fact that Canada Post has put those, you know, relatively speaking, bad ideas on the shelf in favor of continuing door-to-door delivery. Now, according to a press release from the Canadian Union of Postal Workers, they're happy with this decision, and they're hoping that the new government will review Canada Post and hopefully restore door-to-door service throughout areas of the country where it's already been discontinued, or at least decreased. Now, obviously, the union is going to be in favor of more because that means more jobs and more job security for postmen, which I think many of us would probably say is probably a good thing because, you know, we want to assume that if you go into working for Canada Post, you have a steady job. Of course, now, some people will say, but that's back to square one because the whole problem was that we're trying to save money on Canada Post. Of course, that does open up an interesting conversation. Do we want to save money on Canada Post? Now, you might say, well, why wouldn't you? But ultimately, a service like the mail delivery kind of is an essential service. It's really important for a country like Canada to have, you know, more than one option as opposed to email. And we can't always rely on, you know, Amazon Drone to deliver our packages. It's really important that Canada Post actually have capabilities to deliver the mail. You know, it's pretty self-explanatory right there. And ensuring that there are jobs there, well, that's also kind of good, too. I mean, it helps the economy when we're not putting people out of work. Now, whether or not we could save a bit of money in taxes, well, again, but what are we sacrificing then? We're just adding more unemployed people to the pool of unemployment. That's not really saving us a lot of money in the long term, regardless of what's happening. Now, of course, the news of moving from home-to-home delivery to these kind of mailbox sites was met with widespread scorn. When the Canada Post chairperson spoke to the House of Commons, his speech was met with a lot of derision across Canada, with many people in the community, including local mayors, as well as local MPs, calling it ultimately a very foolish decision. The mailboxes in question were being placed in ways that were both inaccessible, but also seemed to have no common sense associated with them. They were being placed on people's property, damaging lawns and damaging driveways. They're being placed in areas that were not safe, you know, near ditches and whatnot. And it really concerned a lot of people who were saying, if you expect people to walk here in the morning to collect their mail, you can't put this someplace where there are major hazards for people walking down the street. This, of course, becomes even more problematic when we're talking about people who have disabilities here in Canada. Many organizations were very concerned that these mailboxes were being placed in ways that essentially made it almost impossible for somebody who has a disability to access their mail in a safe and timely way. It does make one wonder about the timing of this announcement, really basically on the heels of the Conservative defeat and the Liberal victory, that the Canada Post is now announcing that, hey, we're going to backtrack on that whole big plan. Ultimately, it kind of makes you wonder, what was the motivation behind it in the first place? Was it simply a question of saving revenue for Canada Post, or was this more of a top-down enforcement? And again, it kind of bears some striking similarities between this and the CRA crackdown on charities. Ultimately, we'll have to see how the Liberals approach this. According to Rabble, the Liberal Party plan for Canada Post does not specifically mention returning to door-to-door delivery. That being said, I know that the Green Party was quite adamantly against this, and Elizabeth May and a number of her candidates were attending rallies that, not necessarily meaning too much, they attended a lot of rallies. But the point being is that the political winds have shifted. This may be Canada Post's saying, raising a flag to the government saying, please make this go away. And again, this is going to tie into our next segment, but will Justin Trudeau and the Liberal Party, will they step up on this? Will they actually reintroduce Canada Post door-to-door? Remains to be seen. But we can add this to our ongoing list of watching for what Trudeau does. Does he live up to the so-called claim that he is a progressive, liberal Canadian politician? Or will he kind of fall back on traditional liberal patterns of kind of being a bit centrist and, you know, not really necessarily making any kind of decisions that seem to be liberal? Well, this brings us to our main segment of the day, and that is the campaign promises of one Justin Trudeau, the new Prime Minister of Canada, and the leader of the Liberal Party of Canada, which now holds a majority government here in Canada. So there's lots of different sites that are sort of tracking this. I was looking at TrudeauMeter.ca, which keeps track of every last promise Trudeau made and ultimately plans to hold him accountable for those pledges. Now, again, how we'll do that, of course, is by tracking them and making sure people stay, you know, reminded of this sort of thing so that they can, you know, write to their MPs and encourage the Liberal Party to follow through on the promises that they made, as well as I think, you know, the progressive community of Canada you know, can't sit back and hope that Trudeau proves to be as liberal as he claims to be. We have to stand up and make sure that he does. We're not going to get a new government, likely for another 5 years. So it's very important that we can make sure that the media, as well as the voter base, and as the politicians themselves, know that he's being watched and watched very carefully. So with that in mind, let's take a look at some of these promises and decide whether or not Trudeau likely will follow up on them, or whether or not, you know, these might be pipe dreams. It all remains to be seen. Now, there are, in fact, 167 different pledges made by Trudeau. We may not look at every single one of them, but we'll look at some of the big ones. And at the very least, we'll try to get an idea of, okay, you know, where is he on that scale of following through on this? Now, I mean, why don't we start with what we were just talking about, the Canada Post door-to-door delivery. Now, on the Trudeau meter site, it says that this is an in-progress promise. Now, it does point out that Trudeau did not have any direct action to make this happen. It was Canada Post that halted the conversion, but it was done so in anticipation of working with a new government to revise that plan. So, I don't know, this might be kind of a free pass, but, you know, we'll see. We'll kind of see on this one. Let's start with some good old-fashioned access to information. So Trudeau promised to amend the Access to Information Act so that government data and information is made open by default in digital formats. Again, you know, that's something that I think could conceivably happen. He wants to eliminate all fees associated with access to information process except the initial $5 filing fee. Again, that definitely helps the ability to track down and find information. Again, not too controversial, but, you know, that again remains to be seen. Improve open data accessibility. Again, sort of a general one, but it kind of encompasses what he has pledged to do in this case. Now, one of the interesting questions, of course, is going to be about the issue of government spying. So the whole C-51 bill, you know, we'll see how that ultimately plays into this role. Access to information can be a bit different in terms of government privacy invasion, so we'll kind of see how that goes. Probably one of the biggest promises that Trudeau has made is ending the first-past-the-post voting system and exploring alternative options. Now, this might be the most controversial as well and the most difficult to bring about. However, as I think many have pointed out, this ultimately could be the most important promise of the entire election. And I don't put that mildly for a reason. Ending first-past-the-post eliminates the need for voting strategically. It eliminates the requirement for progressives to vote liberal because they don't want to have the conservatives win. This would, in theory, allow the NDP, the Greens, other parties to be elected in larger numbers and form coalition governments that are designed to cooperate and not monopolize power. You know, many of the issues that we're concerned about, they're not so much questions of, can this be done? It's a question of, can this be brought to the House of Commons and voted on successfully? Having more representation in Parliament is great for your side, but at the very other side of that coin, of course, is, though, that by having a system that allows a party to monopolize the process means you are essentially just handing them the keys to the country, which we have done with the Liberals. I mean, they can pass whatever they want. Nobody can stop them. Same with the Conservatives before them. If we had the NDP in power, it would be the same thing. Now, if we have a alternative system, then not only can you safeguard the electoral system from this sort of control, but you can almost kind of, you can do a way of voting that ensures that your vote elects people who you think will cooperate. So you may only want to elect NDP and liberals. You may, you know, for instance, if you're in a riding that, say, has three candidates of each, you may vote for two NDP and one liberal, or two liberal and one NDP. You may want to limit your own party's potential power base in exchange for bringing in a few other voices to ensure political integrity. It's really fundamental that our system respect that integrity, and it just currently doesn't. So gaining action on many of these issues would be a lot more likely to happen if we had a collaboration-based government. Right now, liberals can just say, well, what we say goes. But if the NDP have an issue they want to get voted on, they're probably going to have to make some pretty huge concessions. Now, if it was a minority government, if the Liberals didn't have the power to pass legislation on their own and they had to cooperate, that would ensure that the two sides got together, they sat down, and they hammered out an agreement. And agreements are generally better than just one side making a supreme decision. Now, will Trudeau essentially bite the hand that gave him his power? That's hard to say, but it's probably the most important promise that he's made, and probably the most important one that progressives have to ensure he follows through on. Trudeau has also promised to ban partisan government ads, restore the voter identification card as an acceptable form of identification, so that would decrease a lot of voter suppression that was going on. He has vowed to increase election fraud penalties, provide Elections Canada with the resources it needs to investigate voter fraud and suppression, illegal financing, and other matters that threaten the integrity of the electoral process. All of these roll into elections, of course. Restore the independence of the Commissioner of Canada Elections so they're able to freely persecute electoral violations. Scrap Bill C-50, the Citizen Voting Act, which, you know, that needs to go. Review the limits on how much political parties can spend during elections. Ensure the spending between elections is subject to limits. Again, balancing the political scales. You don't want to have one or two parties that have unlimited resources compared to the smaller parties. So again, some very general common sense things. Will he follow through on any of those? That's going to be really the litmus test of this government, in my opinion. Here's another big one. Restore the mandatory long-form census. And this has actually gotten a fair bit of media attention in the last few days, which I think probably makes it more likely that this one will happen. So again, the pressure will be on to make sure that Trudeau is aware, that we're aware, that he made this promise. You know what I mean? We know, Trudeau. We want you to know that we know that you know that we know. Or something. So make sure that media is talking about this, the topic is trending on Twitter, that Stats Canada is aware that there is a desire for this to return. One topic that we, of course, have not shut up about on the sector for since any time is Bill C-51. And one of the things that I think we have quite rightly criticized Trudeau for so much is the fact that he voted for this awful, awful bill. And that should never be forgiven or forgotten. Trudeau allowed, I mean, he had a, obviously the Conservatives could have had this happen anyway, but Trudeau tacitly put his stamp of approval on this bill and defended it. And that is terrible and a major failure for Canadian politics. So, he made some very important promises that he was going to revise C-51 and make it less oppressive and invasive to Canadians. A very important process of that is to define, quote, terrorist propaganda more clearly. Right now, it is so vague that, you know, David Suzuki could be considered a terrorist because he speaks out against certain Canadian economic factors. We need to make sure that Bill C-51 cannot be used to crush opposition to government and big business. Ultimately, there's a lot of questions there about how this bill will be implemented in the future that need to be addressed. Will Trudeau likely address these? My guess is that no, he's not. I know that that hurts to say, but I personally don't believe Trudeau really believes any of those things are important. So I think that we're likely going to lose on that one and lose big time. But again, you know, we'll see if that prediction comes true or not. And one area where Trudeau has followed through is the ending of Operation Impact, airstrikes against ISIS targets by the Canadian Air Force in Syria and Iraq. This has provoked a lot of discussion already, but again, an important first step, and one that I think should not be understated in the fact that he is recognizing the bigger footprint of Canadian politics around the world. One of the things that Canada lost in the Harper years, and to be fair, long before Harper as well, but Canada used to be seen as a peacekeeping nation. We were not a nation that involved ourselves militarily in other countries. We were a country that involved itself diplomatically. We put pressure, a peaceful pressure, and we tried to negotiate and find peaceful resolutions to conflicts. Recently, Canada has been militarizing to a shocking amount, putting more troops on the ground in Afghanistan and putting a lot of money into our military forces. For example, buying F-35s, insanely expensive fighter jets that we don't need. So again, that's something that Trudeau promised to just not do. So we'll see how that works. But this is a positive first step, that he recognizes that we're not doing the world any favors by getting involved militarily in conflicts like this. Another big topic we've talked about on this show a lot is the recommendations for the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, in particular, the situation around the murdered Aboriginal women of Canada. Trudeau has promised to launch a national public inquiry into this. Again, this remains to be seen if it will happen. I'm very skeptical about this one. I think that there's maybe a 49-51% chance about this one actually coming true. Now, the reason I say that is because, previously speaking, I don't think the Liberal Party has exactly done much to convince me or many progressives that they are interested in very seriously confronting the issue that First Nations face in Canada in terms of society, in terms of the economy, in terms of poverty and addictions and healthcare. So that, you know, that's a very, I don't know, that's going to be a strange one. If the NDP had more power in Parliament, I think that this would be something that would happen, because the NDP have consistently made this an important issue. So I don't know what will happen with Trudeau's government. Maybe, maybe not. But again, with, I think, appropriate amounts of pressure, we might be able to force him to make some sort of gesture towards this issue. Well, you know what? We're actually getting close on time, and we've only really scratched the surface of these Trudeau promises. So what we're going to do is we'll come back to this in 2 weeks and take a look at a few more. And we'll look at the news and see where things are going and what Trudeau has indicated in the next few weeks. In the meantime, we're going to take a quick commercial break here on The Sector. We'll return, of course, with Christopher Lee and The Raven by Edgar Allan Poe. It will be absolutely spine-chilling, so stay tuned.
This is the sound of compost and recyclables going into the garbage. Garbage that ends up in the landfill, creating greenhouse gases. This is the sound of a more sustainable campus. You can make a difference when you sort it out. Learn more at sustain.ubc.ca/sortitout.
A long time ago, in a city far, far away,
CITR
was born. In the decade ahead, America will be in space.
CITR
is already there.
I
astronaut Neil Armstrong had this to say about
CITR.
That's one small step for man.
So vote.
CITR 101.9 FM, Vancouver.
Herbert R. Tarlick, Chairman.
And we are back here on The Sector with me, Ethan Clow, discussing the role of nonprofits, social justice, and activism. Now, because it is Friday, it is Halloween tomorrow, we wanted to do something a bit scary, a bit fun, a bit interesting. So, I have gone online, I have tracked down a really fun recording of The Raven by Edgar Allan Poe by the recently deceased Christopher Lee. Now, Christopher Lee, of course, a fantastic actor, and you will hear it in his voice. This guy is amazing. So, now that you can find this online, but I got it right here. We'll listen to it together, and we'll close with the show with this fantastic reading of The Raven, one of my favorite poems of all time, and just a fantastic piece of American literature that's just stupendous. It's so creepy. Remember to have a fantastic Halloween. I hope that it's all kinds of frightening, and hopefully you eat lots of sugary candy because that stuff is so good. Anyway, we will see you all in 2 weeks' time on the next episode of The Sector. Enjoy The Raven.
The Raven. Once upon a midnight dreary, while I pondered weak and weary over many a quaint and curious volume of forgotten lore, while I nodded, nearly napping, suddenly there came a tapping, as of someone gently rapping at my chamber door. "'Tis some visitor," I muttered, "tapping at my chamber door. Only this and nothing more." Ah, distinctly I remember it was in the bleak December, and each separate dying ember wrought its ghost upon the floor. Eagerly I wished the morrow. Vainly I had sought to borrow from my books surcease of sorrow, sorrow for the lost Lenore, for the rare and radiant maiden whom the angels named Lenore. Nameless here forevermore. And the silken, sad, uncertain rustling of each purple curtain thrilled me, filled me with fantastic terrors never felt before. So that now, to still the beating of my heart, I stood repeating, to some visitor entreating entrance at my chamber door, some late visitor entreating entrance at my chamber door, this it is, and nothing more. Presently, my soul grew stronger. Hesitating then no longer, "Sir," said I, "or madam, truly your forgiveness I implore. But the fact is I was napping, and so gently you came rapping, and so faintly you came tapping, tapping at my chamber door, that I scarce was sure I heard you. Here I opened wide the door." There, and nothing more. Deep into that darkness peering, long I stood there wondering, fearing, doubting, dreaming dreams no mortal ever dared to dream before. But the silence was unbroken, and the darkness gave no token, and the only word there spoken was the whispered word, "Lenore." This I whispered, and an echo murmured back the word, "Lenore." Merely this, and nothing more. Back into the chamber turning, all my soul within me burning, soon again I heard a tapping somewhat louder than before. "Surely," said I, "surely that is something at my window lattice. Let me see then what thereat is, and this mystery explore. Let my heart be still a moment. and this mystery explore. 'Tis the wind, and nothing more. Open here, I flung the shutter, when, with many a flirt and flutter, in there stepped a stately raven of the saintly days of yore. Not the least obeisance made he, not a minute stopped or stayed he, but with mien of lord or lady, perched above my chamber door, perched upon a bust of Pallas, just above my chamber door, perched and sat, and nothing more. Then this ebony bird, beguiling my sad fancy into smiling, by the grave and stern decorum of the countenance it wore, though thy crest be shorn and shaven, thou, I said, art sure no craven, ghastly, grim, and ancient raven, wandering from the nightly shore. Tell me what thy lordly name is on the night's Plutonian shore. Quoth the raven, nevermore. Much I marvel this ungainly fowl to hear discourse so plainly, though its answer little meaning, little relevancy bore. For we cannot help agreeing that no living human being ever yet was blessed with seeing bird above his chamber door. Bird or beast above the sculptured bust above his chamber door with such name as Nevermore. But the raven, sitting lonely on the placid bust, spoke only that one word, as if his soul in that one word he did outpour. Nothing further then he uttered, not a feather then he fluttered. Still I scarcely more than muttered. Other friends have flown before. On the morrow, will he leave me, as my hopes have flown before? Then the bird said, nevermore. Startled at the stillness broken by reply so aptly spoken, doubtless, said I, what it utters is its only stock and store, caught from some unhappy master, whom unmerciful disaster followed fast, and followed faster, until his songs one burden bore, till the dirges of his hope, that melancholy burden bore of never, nevermore. But the raven, still beguiling all my sad soul into smiling, straight I wheeled a cushioned seat in front of bird and bust and door. Then upon the velvet sinking, I betook myself to linking fancy unto fancy, thinking what this ominous bird of yore, what this grim, ungainly, gaunt, and ominous bird of yore meant in croaking evermore. This I sat engaged in guessing, but no syllable expressing to the fowl, whose fiery eyes now burned into my bosom's core. This and more I sat divining, with my head at ease reclining, on the cushion's velvet violet lining that the lamplight gloated o'er. But whose velvet violet lining, with the lamplight gloating o'er, she shall press, nevermore. Then methought the air grew denser, perfumed from an unseen censer swung by seraphim, whose footfalls tinkled on the tufted floor. Wretch, I cried, thy God hath lent thee. By these angels he has sent thee respite, respite and nepenthe from thy memories of Lenore. Quaff O quaff this kind nepenthe, and forget this lost Lenore. Quoth the raven, nevermore. Prophet, said I, thing of evil, prophet still, if bird or devil, whether tempter sent, or whether tempest tossed thee here ashore, desolate, yet all undaunted, on this desert land enchanted, on this home by horror haunted, tell me truly, I implore, is there balm in Gilead? Tell me, I implore. Quoth the raven, nevermore. Prophet, said I, thing of evil, prophet still, if bird or devil, by that heaven that bends above us, by that God we both adore, tell this soul with sorrow laden, if within the distant Aden it shall clasp a sainted maiden whom the angels named Lenore. Clasp a rare and radiant maiden whom the angels named Lenore. Quoth the raven, nevermore. Be that word our sign of parting, bird or fiend, I shrieked, upstarting, get thee back into the tempest and the night's Plutonian shore. Leave no black plume as a token of that lie thy soul hath spoken. Leave my loneliness unbroken, quit the past above my door. Take thy beak from out my heart, and take thy form from off my door. Quoth the raven, nevermore. And the raven, never flitting, still is sitting on the padded bust of Pallas just above my chamber door, and his eyes have all the seeming of a demon's that is dreaming, and the lamplight o'er him streaming throws his shadow on the floor, and my soul from out that shadow that lies floating on the floor shall be lifted.
Right Honorable W.L. Mackenzie King, Prime Minister of Canada, speaking from